Inhale. And exhale. I'm going to do a little opening imaginal attunements, declaration. This, I would invite you to close your eyes and visualize what I'm going to say. And each line will say, I am. Okay? I am the earth. I am.
I am.
I am the opening heart.
I am.
I am the sky.
I am.
I am the endless expanse of awareness.
I am.
I am the starlight of eternity.
I am.
I am the moonlight of presence.
I am.
I am the sunshine of life.
I am.
I am the thunder of being.
I am.
I am the lightning of passions.
I am.
I am the rainfall of tears.
I am.
I am the winds of forgiveness.
I am.
I am the sparkling morning dew of laughter.
I am.
I am the clouds of life passing.
I am.
I am the rainbow of memories and futures to come.
I am.
I am caves.
I am.
I am deep, deep sleep.
I am.
I am a luminous fish in dark pools.
I am.
I am dreams of remembrance.
I am.
I am crystals.
I am.
I am life awakening to myself.
I am.
I am rivers.
I am.
I am the running pulse of procreation.
I am.
I am waterfalls.
I am.
I am orgasmic joy.
I am.
I am fields and forests.
I am.
I am fertility, nourishment, and growth.
I am.
I am deserts and arid lands.
I am.
I am patience and the burning will of perseverance.
I am.
I am rocky shores.
I am.
I am life in transition.
I am.
I am hurricanes.
I am.
I am trust and surrender.
I am.
I am strong ocean currents.
I am.
I am life in the flow.
I am.
My tribe is creation. My tribe is creation. The earth is my clan. The earth is my clan. All that exists here are my people. All that exists here are my people. I am the flowering of forever, I am, in the garden of the divine family of creation.
I am.
Let's open the eyes. So this is an exercise in what I call imaginal hygiene. Also a cure for the shriveled sense of self we inherit as egoic, dominated people. So this presentation, we're calling it Deep Herbalism, it's a name, and we're going to go over a little bit about Deep Herbalism contrasted with Shallow Herbalism, and we'll go into a bit of the Deep Herbalist perspective on plants, especially plant intelligence, and then we'll move into ways to associate or communicate with plants at a deeper level. And we'll move into an understanding of successively deeper ways of understanding the relationship with the kingdom of plants. So deep herbalism contrasts with shallow herbalism. And these terms are largely used in ecological studies. I went through a PhD program in ecological anthropology, so I'm quite aware of that whole deep herbalism, deep ecology thing. So, deep ecology, shallow ecology. Shallow ecology is really, you don't change your dominant worldview. You still have sort of an industrial growth paradigm working in you. And so you're just trying to lessen the destruction. So when you drive to work in your gas car to a job, which is largely doing the thing of destruction, you want to have a nice drive. So you don't want the side of the freeway to be all trashed because it's a bad backdrop. See what I'm saying? So you're just trying to lessen the destructive elements, but not really change the paradigm that creates the destruction. That's shallow ecology. Mm-hmm. Deep ecology is you become, in a sense, the rainforest protecting itself. You have an ecological worldview, an ecological sense of self. And so it comes out of the superiority complex of the human species and into that you're a responsible member of an operating, balancing, nourishing ecosystem. That's deep ecology. Okay. So to make this into shallow herbalism, deep herbalism, we'll kind of take this understanding and we'll apply it to when the mainstream or industrial growth society makes a policy or does something, we're often react against it. So the mainstream is the reference point. We become then counterculture or alternative or green. See what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. These are reactive to what they're doing. Okay. So for example, if they make war, there's anti-war. There's a place for anti-war. But it's like war is not the answer, it's on people's yards. That to me is sort of reactive because it's like, what is the answer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so a more generative, proactive way as opposed to reactive is your pro-peace.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You're putting forth a way of life.
Right.
Okay. That often gets lost if you're always reacting.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So...
because you're still focusing on what's wrong.
Yeah,
Reading for the problem.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so this kind of process, it goes through a lot of elements we're not really that aware of. Mm-hmm. And I would say, for example, if the mainstream starts to destroy the environment, then it's reactive to say we're sustainable. Because if I ask you, how's your marriage? You say, it's sustainable. There's no juice. There's no... A more proactive would be thriving, flourishing. See what I'm saying? So even the whole sustainability is like, to me, reactive. Okay. So let's move into health. Mm-hmm. So the mainstream, your life, makes you sick. Then there's an understanding of health that you're symptom-free. That's reactive, because when you're symptom-free, you're functional and you go back to work, okay? So if you look at health as proactive, sort of like there's an edge of how good you're possible to feel, then health kind of works the evolutionary program. And the feedback is, how good can you feel? Mm-hmm. How potentiated can you be? It's no end to it, that understanding of health. Okay. So there is, this gets into shallow and deep herbalism, because the medicine of shallow herbalism is like, take the tincture and make the symptom go away. Mm-hmm. It's working on an allopathic conventional medical model. It's like green pharmacy. Sort of like that. Mm-hmm. Walmart, whatnot. There's a place for it all. It gets people understanding that herbs can help them. Yeah. It has its function. Okay, so deep herbalism is really, you're accessing the balancing, the nourishing, strengthening, enlightening presence of nature. And it understands plants as sort of the umbilical cords to Gaia. And that once you start running this program, sort of an indigenous elder wisdom. Mm-hmm. There is historically times where when there's social unrest, herbalism makes a comeback. All through history, I researched all this. So there's an understanding that, okay, it's a medicine of the people, it's free. You know? But there's another element, there's teachings coming through the plants, straighten shit out. And kind of like, so the 60s was a time of social unrest. Herbalism made it came back. 50 years, the dark ages of herbalism in the U.S., hounded by the FDA, everything. And it came back. But it didn't come back through science. It came back from younger people who were feeling the disconnect to nature. So herbalism in the U.S. has that legacy of sort of a spiritual revitalization movement, which didn't happen in Europe, because Europe got co-opted by science. And it's been a shallow herbalism. So a lot of people in Europe look to America to show the way for a sovereign herbalism, which really runs the story of Gaian consciousness. Okay. So with that said, I want to go a little bit into plant intelligence. We have this understanding, taught in the school, that there's sort of a ladder of intelligence, of knowledge. Magic. Then we evolved into religion. And then we evolved into the cleansing light of science. Okay? So if you're thinking scientific, there's sort of a superiority thing that you're that way. Okay, so applied to the planet, then at the bottom, there's the elements and bacteria. And then you kind of move up to the animals, and then to the plants, and then to the animals, and then to the humans. Okay? So there's another way to look at this. And that is the society of nature model. Society of nature, as opposed to the ladder of evolution.
Instead of the ladder of what?
The society of nature.
Instead of the ladder
model, as opposed to the ladder of evolution model.
Okay.
The ladder of evolution is inherently hierarchical. The society of nature, okay, who's the elders?
Mm-hmm.
It's the elements. They're the wise ones. We're the baby species.
Yeah.
We're the adolescents. You know, like adolescents almost kill themselves when they get crazy. Okay, no judgment, this is what it is. Okay, from the society of nature model, plants are elders to humans. There's another way of understanding plant intelligence, I call it the Gaian jewel. So if you look at it like all the cells in your body, though they're different, they still run the body program of the inherent health. They're all on the same page. So they're running a certain intelligence. So Gaia, as an organism, is also running an overriding intelligence, self-organizing, about health of the planet. And all beings, just like all cells in our body, plants included, are running this as well. So none are smarter, but they're all running different elements of this overriding program. There's another view that plants, as do animals, have oversouls. An indigenous awareness, it's like the mother or the father. It's like Santa Claus is like the master of the reindeer, you know, or something like that. So each, when you're connecting to a plant, there's the mother or the oversoul that you're communicating to and has the wisdom of that species. That's really what you're connecting to, not the little plant that can't move like that. And of course, there's the Namaste principle. That all beings are the light of the divine and to respect them because we're all doing this dance in this evolutionary plane. Okay. That said, plants as elders, we can look at plants as the original medicine. The blueprints or green prints of all medicine. And like any kind of a doctor, you could, if you're sick, he'll give you or she'll give you the medicine, but often will tell you, well, don't do that anymore. We'll do this instead. It's called preventative medicine. That's part of, you know, helping you not get sick, so you don't have to do that. Well, plants also have that function. They can, if we can communicate, help direct us on how to flourish as a species. How to not do those things which cause all these problems. Okay, so these teachings of the plants are by extension teachings of the planet. And it's really about how healthy ecosystems balance and evolve and flourish. And these teachings, which include things like everything can communicate with everything else, life force permeates all creation, it needs to be balanced and reciprocated in its access. And species have their domains and need to be respected, such things like that. We could say that's sort of a Gaian Dharma, or teachings of the planet. These teachings have come in through the human species, through mythic archetypes. All the world's myths contain these teachings in them. And they come direct from the planet. So these mythic archetypes create or affirm a kind of indigenous consciousness. It's an overriding worldview about how to function on this planet. And this indigenous consciousness, there's a movie called Fire in the Mountain. Have you seen this?
I've heard of it. I have not seen it.
You can get it.
Yeah.
Okay. Briefly, in the late 90s, the Dalai Lama in France had a big convocation of the world's religions, and he had a special meeting of indigenous peoples from all over the world, and he called them in, every continent, Australia, the Voodoos, Alaska, everywhere. And they all came to this big giant yurt in the Pyrenees at some old monastery, and they met for a week, and it was filmed. And you can see that these elders who have never met each other before, they do the same thing.
Yeah.
The same way as the blessings, the same way of praying, even the same way of using tobacco.
The truth is.
It's all there.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. It's hardwired into the planet about how to behave.
Yeah.
And when you get off of that, the plants are corrected to this. Because they have that capacity. They're not egoic. Exactly. So that's part of what they're teaching, to help correct course aberrations and such. This is an important part of deep herbalism, is being able to run these teachings in your way of life and how you see the world. Now, just like our body has antibodies when the immune system, so ecosystems also have an immune system. We call these weeds. And you can see in Portland, whenever there's an abused landscape and industrial fields and things like that, what comes? It's the Queen's Anne's lace. It's the thistles. It's the blackberries.
Yeah.
It's the chicory. It's the yellow dye.
Dandelion?
Levers. Dandelion. Yeah. Okay. So those are the first ones that come in to heal the barren soil. They often have tap roots. Bring it up. We use these herbs as alteratives, blood purifiers, and such things. So in our ecosystem, when it's a little off, we just use what nature does anyways to help on our internal ecosystem. So, with that understanding, because humans are on this special sort of journey of egoic initiation, when we get really spun off and do a lot of destruction, nature sends in special plants. And we find in the ditches of Kansas, cannabis. We find mushrooms in the clear cuts in Cascadia. We find ayahuasca in the frontier towns in the Amazon and in Oboga the same way. So in these disturbed ecosystems, there is a special kind of plant and fungus called these the teacher plants. They tend to contain neurotransmitters, which are communication molecules. They can communicate to us. So when we take them, what are they doing? They're reminding us of what we forgot.
Yes.
And if you resist that, you freak out.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
So,
all of them.
So the indigenous people saw these as creation's gift to humanity. They're ceremonially used.
Yes.
But to understand these plants and fungus in that sort of way. They are, and there are special humans that like to connect with them. So we have in our both tribes, plants and humans, kind of emissaries to each other, shamans and such. And so to understand that a lot of how these teacher plants works is they surface and clear. Because things go unconscious when we're egoically dominated and fixated. And what goes unconscious, we forget our communication, our connection to nature and to spirit and such. It's just part of the process. And so these plants have a way of surfacing that, and you start to see the errors of your way, and you start to reconnect into your identity as an ecological being, and mature into that awareness of what humans can really be if we're running the Gaian program, and through this initiation of the suffering of a egoic-dominated being. Okay, so it's to contextualize these teacher plants in the deeper herbalism paradigm. Because often those kind of plants become drugs, and when you mess with those plants, they mess with you.
Yes.
Tobacco, everything like that. Don't mess with them in that way. It's ceremonial use.
Yeah.
Okay, so with that said, another element to be aware of is that plants contain this molecule of magic.
Mm-hmm.
It's chlorophyll. So, you may or may not be aware that hemoglobin is like one molecule off from chlorophyll.
Wow.
We have iron in plants as magnesium, but it's the exact same molecule.
Wow.
And we use it obviously for running blood flow and nourishment in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, we know that plants turn light into life.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Some
gift.
So
there's a deeper, deep herbalist understanding. It's spoke about in the Ayurvedic teaching, but there's other places too. That humans' task is to turn life into love.
Mm-hmm.
Plants, light into life. Humans, light into love.
Life, life, love.
Okay, so we're going to go back to this understanding. I'd next like to address how to communicate or to relate with plants at a deeper level. The first one is, we'll call it the subtlety of the senses. Before humans were like beat over the head with TV and movies and explosions and such, that we armor ourselves to move through all this, we were able to develop senses more subtly and in more of a balance. You know, because we move through a forest, especially when you're a little kid, you develop your senses along these ways so you can really like feel into things, how that feels, how that smells, and you start to pick up the language of nature through that. But it's something that if you're not raised that way, you gotta develop it. And also the ratio of their use, because we live in a society that's very visual and it's very audio. It's always reading books and looking at things and listening and such. The whole thing about the sense, touch, and taste, and smell, these are meant to be used in a balanced way, the rest of your senses. So to reestablish that ratio of balance is also part of it. There's also something called imaginal cognitions. Imaginal cognitions is ways to perceive the world that's outside of rationality. Mm-hmm. And we're talking dreams, mm-hmm. visions, creative birthings, yes. synchronicities, yes. intuitions, yes. all these sort of things are ways to understand the world, which often don't get really validated because we're so wired into the rational thing. But nature's always trying to communicate, but you gotta pay attention to those things, and you have to develop them in that way. The third area is what I'll call imaginal hygiene. And the little exercise we did in the beginning was a certain expression of that. And that means you need to really think of your imagination as like, use your imagination. It's connected into the creative matrix of nature. There's a lot of creativity coming through that. Mm-hmm. But if it's just your imagination, that's another kind of imagination. It's just your imagination. Imagination is like, it's like the choppy waters of your mind. And when there's, you're filled in with a lot of extraneous material world stuff, there's so much going on, the plants can't get a word in edgewise. Because they're communicating to you, but you can't perceive because your mind is so much in the busy, busy hive mind of this exterior world. So you've got to give it some space and to clean and clear your imaginal world. It's a little bit like a colonic. You just got to like do certain things, and I could go into a lot of these things, we won't go into it right now, to kind of clean and clear the imagination and to kind of repopulate it like an intestine with good mythic archetypes and such, you know, so that you can start to communicate. So the fairies can communicate to you, so all of that, so nature becomes alive. There's a famous saying by Sartre, that French existentialism, nature is mute. Why is it mute? Because he's not listening. He's fixated on various other things. Okay. And lastly, the ability of songs to communicate, that we are a singing species, and that all is vibration, and all is a song, and when we sing, it gets us out of our head, and into our heart, into our body, and there's a communication that goes on. You can feel it, you can resonate, you know, with that. Okay, and I'd like to move into four successively deeper ways of connecting with plants. The first, call it the aesthetics of nature. And in many ways what I'm discussing here is deeper levels of symbiosis. The aesthetics of nature is when really you spend time in nature and it's like the beauty. And you feel it. And the beauty of nature is really the lover of nature. And that you're in a place and you're like, oh, there's the flower, how it looks and how it feels. And you almost start to begin to see, like if plants are a tribe and they have a language, to begin to read that a little bit. Mm-hmm. And to feel like you spend time, quality time, and you feel a kinship. It's like any kind of relationship. You got to spend time with it. And the beauty in itself is a way of healing and is a way of rebalancing. And beauty can take many forms, obviously, not just a certain like, sky and such. There's beauty in all kinds of levels to it. It's how you're aesthetic, but it's appreciating that. So the next level here, I call it reading nature. This is more the level of the medical herbalist. This is where you're able to perceive the unifying underlying currents which bubble up into the material world, and you see affinities. Like, hollowness, like Angelica, she's hollow. Okay? So when you see this hollowness, it comes from a place of hollowness. And sometimes if you're somebody who's feeling like really lost in your identity, you're feeling a hollowness. So it comes from that same place. So this is part of the doctrine of signatures. I think many, how many of you know what that is? Yeah, doctrine of signatures, it's an ancient way of understanding herbalism. And it's really the ability to read these ways that plants grow, how they look, their form, their color, everything is an expression in the material world of something that's deeper down. And so like if you're learning massage, grasp. What grasp? The talons of birds, the hand, the uterus, the strangler fin. It's all grasping like that. And so you can match those. Because if something, if you want to learn massage, then you drink the strangler fig. Or you do something that cultivates or connects in with these other forms that come from that same place. So, the reader of nature, you're a little bit like the pulse reader. You know, like they're feeling out? You're also becoming a seer. So this is the healer. Not as somebody who's looking at pathologies and illnesses, you're looking at more like, oh, you see somebody's underlying health through their disharmony, and you see their health and you coax out the health. And as you coax out the health, then the illness isn't there because it's an expression of that imbalance. So the health seer really works at this level of deep herbalism. There's a saying in Lao Tzu. If you can see the potentials in things in seeds, that's genius. So if you see in a seed what it can become, that's a level of genius. And in the Vedas, the old ancient Indian scriptures, they can say if you can truly read nature, all the scriptures are there. All the teachings. That disconnect that nature can teach you everything, but they lost the ability to read it, so now we need books or whatever. Okay, so a third level to this is what I'll call radical symbiosis or cross-possessioning. Cross-possessioning sounds kind of tense, so... But it's based on the idea that, you know how shamans often have allies like bears, you know, and then the bear totem, and they have a bear spirit. Well, the same thing happens with plants. You can have a totem plant. And when you're with this plant and ingest this plant, often these are teacher plants, but it can be anything, really. Anything can be a teacher plant if you relate to it as such. Then the plant takes root in you. Okay? And every time you drink the plant or take the plant, it's like watering the plant. And as it grows in you, okay, the benefit for you is health because it doesn't like toxic, sterile soil. You see? So it's going to like give you feedback about how you're living your life. The food you're eating, the relationships you're having, everything, because you're toxifying your soil. But it wants to flourish. And so... it can teach you many things. Plants are very good at managing the organism function. It's because we're so egoic, we forget all that. So to fully assimilate, to fully absorb, to fully release. All organisms need to do that and do it well. But when ego gets in the way, things get stuck at one of those or more elements. Plants are always really good at regenerating. It's like when you mow the grass, they come back. Humans sometimes, when we get flattened, We get flattened sometimes a long time, and we sometimes don't get up. So there's teachings about regeneration that have that capacity. And there's also plants are really good at waking you to a unifying consciousness. These plants are connected. They don't have the ego thing happening. So they're more unified in their awareness, and they can help cultivate in us a more unified awareness as well. So the fourth level, this is the highest teaching of plants that I am aware of, is when the external plant awakens the plant within you. Just like in a guru-devotee relationship, when the guru awakens the divine within you, awakens the plant within you. So this can be understood in the physical way, because our lungs, it's our evolutionary heritage. We come out of plants at some level. Mm-hmm. So our lungs are like leaves. They're shaped like a leaf. They have that respiration function. Our nervous system is like roots of a tree. And again, the hemoglobin, chlorophyll thing. Okay. So energetically, I come out of a strong Tai Chi standpoint. In Tai Chi, you learn to root. And you can stand there when you're really good at it. And when you root down, you can't be picked up. Then you like, stop it, and you can get picked up. Old guy used to work with a Taiwan. He'd get on two scales, and he could make one go 300 pounds. Wow. Just from his mind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, and so it's there. Mm-hmm. Okay. What most people know about this energetic plant within is the chakra system, Kundalini. It goes up in this sort of way, and that's part of evolution. Uh-huh. It's like awakening the Kundalini, which is the stalk, and the chakras are like flowers, and they open up like that into like the light, which brings us to the light. Because what are plants good at? They know how to go to the light. And where is the light in human body internally? It's the heart. And we love. So this internal plant goes to the light. And the more we love in this unconditional power of nature way, the more the plants flourish. And so they help us love more. This is what I'm saying about plants turn light to life, plants life to love. Plants are helping that happen. And when this happens, when we love more, all of our evolutionary heritage within us awakens. Its potentials to our potentials. And there's a feedback here, because the more you love in this way, the better you feel. And you learn to refine your sense of how good you can feel, even how good you're allowed to feel. There's deep Puritan programming about feeling guilty for how good it is to feel. Okay, when I say refine, I mean there's subtler and higher vibrations. And you'll find that you go past the pain-pleasure dynamic. Because pain-pleasure is like, it's very body-identified. There's a reason for it, of course. But when you're moving into subtleties, you need to somehow work through that. Because it's dualistic. Mm-hmm. Anytime you're in a pleasure zone, it's haunted by its opposite. Because
yes.
Pain's going to come around the bend, okay? Mm-hmm. So what we're talking here is the bliss current. The bliss current is non-dualistic. Okay, it doesn't have an opposite. Because now you're starting to run this vibration.
Yeah.
But how do you get the bliss? You gotta do the opposite of the pleasure pain thing. You gotta go into the shadow. You gotta go into the pain. Because what's there? It's tied up life force. It's the energy blocks. And these energy blocks, they come through thoughts, they come through emotions. This is why the teacher plants are really good at helping you move these sort of things. But either way, if you're running the bliss current, you got to go into that. And every time you release parts of the shadow, parts of the lower self, etc., there's a self-purification happening. And you're releasing life force. And in some ways, it's like the Buddhist thing, may all beings be happy, and all sentient beings are parts of yourself that are trapped in these lower realms, that you bring the light of the heart and you attend to them and you bring them back into the family of creation and you re-embrace them. So it's not a pushing away. It's showering with love because everything wants to come to life, to love in that way. So you'll find that when you do the shadow work, you're attracted to the devotional arts, practices. It's another culture, way of life. Anything that feeds love, the love current. So, one of the results of this is that it softens many things that we take as facts, which are really beliefs. Facts are often ossified, hardened beliefs. And when you start to soften them, you realize that, maybe the original sin isn't really the original sin. Maybe it's the original blessing. Maybe given the chance, people would much rather help each other than kill and cheat each other. There's all kinds of facts, which are just mass agreements that we carry because we're running this other vibration. And it's part of imaginal hygiene to see how much fear permeates the emotional pollution of this whole planet through that. So some of the benefits of once you start to awaken this heritage is what I'll call soul gain. Soul gain, you're not really gaining, like adding anything. You're becoming more transparent to your heritage. So you can take in, for example, the rootedness of an oak, the stealth of a jaguar. So all these properties of incarnation that you can access to sort of fertilize your existence, your incarnation and such. There's also an internal authority that starts to manifest. That you don't need authority figures telling you what to do and et cetera, because this internal authority is activated. You know what to do because the self-organizing intelligence of nature is manifesting through you. And there's an inherent spontaneity that takes over. And you just... See, now we're moving into self-realization, into such things like that. And so this last element of deep herbalism, what I'll call the human flowering response, because you flower in some ways, is really you become, in some sense, another sun. There's a story, the Anastasia. Maybe it's through that network, I don't know. If it's even true, but it's a great story. And it's about a woman who lived in the city, and she had a garden, and she was surrounded by tall buildings. So her garden got maybe an hour or two of light a day. Yet, her garden flourished. Why is that? People ask her, how do you do it? She goes, I'm their son.
Yes,
dude. See? That's what I'm saying. We become little creator gods and goddesses.
Yes.
And as we move around with this love, all creation responds. And as it responds, it brings out part of their potential, which is inseparable from our potential. So it seems humans have this function. And as many of us are coming out of this dream of separation, this initiation of the egoic possession, and starting to wake up out of that, this is part of where it's headed, as far as I'm understanding. So it's good to somehow have a myth or a story, of which I just kind of gave out here, of how life can work. And this story has gone through me for many years, and it never gets disaffirmed. It just gets developed. So it's the story that I live by and do various things. And to really know that, I think like any organism, Earth is trying to bud us off as little baby gods and goddesses to be conscious and to kind of run the Gaian story through our lives. And really it's not much different than that full, what's it called? The myth of eternal return, that Joseph Campbell thing. You know this? It's like the, there's a family, and the kid grows up in the family culture, and then as an adolescent, the kid goes away, and has a journey, and Mephis survives, has all kinds of teachers, and is matured through this journey, and returns home, And coming home, now this individual has been evolved, matured, and carries the boon back to the family, and the family is nourished. See what I'm saying? So there's a return. So a way to understand this is humanity is sort of like the kid that left the family of Gaia, and we've gone off on this journey, and some of us are starting to come back. And those who are coming back are bringing the boon, the gift, however you can understand that. I mean, in some ways, the internet is sort of a technological expression of telepathic global consciousness. We often technologicalize things before we actually activate them in our own body-mind. But it's part of our way, like training wheels for telepathy and such. And so as more humans are coming back, then it's nice to have like an identity to who we are. And we'll go back to the beginning of the story here. Remember we talked about we see ourselves reactive? So that we're alternative, we're counterculture. So is there a generative, proactive way to understand who we are? Anybody got an idea? A term? Well, I'll tell you one. This birthed through me quite a long time ago in the middle of the university system. And because I went through a PhD, I know how they think. Like a priesthood of Babylon. It's a way of understanding that. And so what the universities create as what's out in cities, because human cities, the cosmopolitan person, highly educated, through books, largely, makes a lot of money, but a largely suicidal economy. And in the city is a very species deficient place to a culture so. There's a lot of humans talking to each other in their own human kind of way. So anyways, what comes out of this are cosmopolitans, which has a good connotation in our culture. Okay, so if you look at it from, okay, cosmopolitans are part of this journey of separation. And it may look good, but from the Gaian story, it ain't gonna last. You know, because they're gonna find that their story, and I'm sure George Bush speeded this up, of the toxicity and the unsustainability of that whole story. So as it starts to come back, then the cosmopolitan story doesn't look so good, doesn't feel so good. So what's the new story? I mean, you could say it's indigenous elder wisdoms, but there's another word, S-Y-L-V-A, Silva. Silva politan. Silva means of the forest or of nature. Politan, like politics, the people of. People of the forest or of nature. Silva politan contrasts with cosmopolitan. It's not that if you're not in the city, then you're a country bumpkin. Because the bumpkins want to be in the city.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like we don't really have a model for somebody who's running the nature. That's the future of humanity. The indigenous elder wisdoms.
Yes,
okay? And so a way to understand that is silvopolitan is a generative, proactive way of understanding who we are. And it allows the whole alternative counterculture a rest. Or it has its place. Understanding. Okay, so I just want to offer this out as a meme, silvopolitan, to be proactive, be generative, and again, when you are a silvopolitan, you've got the rebalancing forces of nature on your side. You've got the tailwind of this rebalancing happening, and there's a lot of juice to that. There's a lot of power to that. And so when you open yourself up, but you need to be able to run it, because it's a vibration. That's just you think it. If you're eating shitty food and you have bad relationships and on and on and on, then you really can't handle that vibration. So this is why it's very evolutionary. Teacher plants, yoga, clean foods, conscious relationships, conscious language, time spent in nature. It's a whole way of life to run that. Then you can run this vibration. And I see it all around, this vibration coming in through different ways. I just know it more from plants. There's a lot of what I call the teacher plants are trying to save the humans. That's another part of our superiority complex about saving the planet. The planet is very actively trying to save the humans.
That's it.
They're very actively trying to do this. So I feel recruited into that. Into that mission. And many of the people, the plants and such, also get that message sooner or later.
So it's like a reunification.
It's a reunification, but again, at another order.
Yes.
This is like, it's not back to the land, because that's regressive.
Right.
It's you're re-engaging at another level.
That's right.
It's a spiral, thing. Good.
That's right. It's a spiral.
So you go through the whole history lesson and re-engage. And when you re-engage, you're coming home to the tribe of creation. And you've gained another level of maturity.
Yes. Yeah, it's looking at with an added dimension. In a two-dimensional way, it looks like a circle. In three-dimensional way, it's a spiral. When you can see things with the additional dimension.
This is a good way to look at it, because what I see is an indigenous peoples. They're running the Gaian program, but it's more unconscious. So there it's like the circle. There's no history. There's no time. And then when you're into industrial growth, ego cultures, it's linear.
Mm-hmm. And they're also
in the Silvapalatin spiral. Because you're in some ways bringing the best of those together.
Yeah, the indigenous have the heaven and earth connection too.
Yep.
Yeah. So the roots way down like a tree,
That's it.
The world tree.
And,
there's a lot of prophecies about this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, a lot of prophecies. Mm-hmm. The eagle and the condor. Mm-hmm. Down in the Amazon, I heard of prophecy. It's an old Inca prophecy about the bridge people.
Yeah.
It's a way to understand Silvapalatin. And that's when the Europeans came. 500 years of the clashing of the cultures. Mm-hmm. Indians, Europeans. And then would come in the bridge people, where they would finally learn from each other and hybridize and synthesize a way to bring the best of both together. Mm-hmm. Silvapalatin's a way to express that. And the more we own that, and really see ourselves as people that are starting to run that story, we have an opportunity to, at ground level, to create this Silvapalatin. And because there's a lot of death rebirths happening right now in the world cultures. Because when you think about it, a lot of indigenous cultures are dying, but they're putting off like flowering seed pollen. And industrial growth culture is going through its own craziness, and it's also throwing out things, and there's a lot of pollen in the air for cross-fertilizing, and that's kind of like a global neo-indigenous, but the way to look at it is a global Silvapalatin as well, of people of the earth, but in a conscious way, and taking, respectfully using what the sort of gift of the journey of separation through technology is rightly used, but from a worldview that's mature, as opposed to otherwise. It's also good in this just to be non-judgmental. This is all process. At some level, it's all good. At another level, it's disaster. Yeah. But to hold those two paradoxes together like that, that's maturity.
It's the yin and the yang. Huh? I'm sure it's the yin and the yang.
The yin and the yang.
That make the whole.
Yeah, and don't feed the emotional pollution on the planet with more negativity, more judgment, and such, you know, it's like, like I said, it's sort of a yoga of intelligence to keep these different levels within one embrace of worldview. And, So, there's a lot more to say, but, well, before I finish, you can have questions. This? It's a creation story song circle. I do once a month in Alberta Street at Sungate Studio. You can take some of these away if you wish. it depends. There's two websites. One's called singingalive.org. Singingalive.org has a current events on there. And Sylvia, Singing Alive, how many people know what that is? Have heard of it?
I don't really understand it
very well. Yeah, Singing Alive is a sacred song circle event. And it's an expression of Silvapalatin culture. Because the songs that come to it, it's very attuned towards the future healed earth now. And in some ways, and to create an event where you live by these dynamics, ceremonial, life as ceremony, and that we are a singing species, and to get people to sing. Because when you sing your prayers, it has a power to it. And to give haven for these songs, because many of these songs are birthing now from the dream time. And some are coming back from thousands of years where they were holding this vibration, but it wasn't quite the right time. But now it's their time. So many of the mantras, many of the psalms, many ancient traditions, Sufi, are like current right now because they're running this future healed earth vibration. And there's many songs being birthed. So Singing Alive is really a ceremonial space for these songs to do their magic and to spread them. It's part of the evangelistic part of the Silvapalatin thing. And it's recorded, and you can get these songs because Singing Alive is recorded. And it's distilled down to various songs, maybe 120 9-hour MP3s. And you could drive around and listen to Silvapalatin vibration all day long.
Nice!
Yeah.
Nice!
Right.
And sing the teachings.
Nice, yeah. Integrate.
Yeah. So the idea is part of what this practice, the Creation Song Circle, it's, again, before there were books and such, there was oral traditions. And people taught through singing and through voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea is that these songs that birth through the Gaian dream time that tell this, they can be grouped. Blessing songs, gratitude songs, element songs, letting go songs, and such. You can string them together, like a mala, and they tell a story. It's a universal story, death and rebirth, flowering of consciousness. It's mapping human spiritual life onto the life cycle of a flowering plant. Just like we too cultivate, and then we flower beneath the sunlight of the heart. And then we fruit in acts of seva, reciprocity, of service. And the seeds, the Shanti seeds, of our actions into this world. When you do this in your imaginal world and through the songs, it has a certain effect. So I've been doing this for many years. So a lot of what I talked about tonight, especially that last part, of the external plant awakening the plant within. It's a creation story that's done in a circle with the eyes closed for almost 2 hours. And I take you through a journey of the flowering of human consciousness and we sing it. And it's all done to work your internal world because it's the same. It's like visualization plus vocalization equals manifestation. It's an old form of affecting change in the world by bringing things together, as opposed to blowing them apart. We're so fixated on all the wonders of analytical science, and that, we forget, is a poetic art of manifestation, of bringing things together and visualizing them. There's a lot to visualize right now. So anyway, I offer that circle. And Singing Alive is happening this year in August. And
where?
CDs can be got off the website.
Where is it happening?
Is it Smith Ranch?
It's the 8th year.
Oh, okay.
Singing Alive. It's moved a lot. This year, we moved again.
Mm-hmm.
We're at a place east of Salem.
Okay.
So I can, it's on the website. It's the 22nd and the 25th of August.
Okay.
And there's another website called tribesofcreation.com. It's also mine. There's many articles on there relating to some of what the talk I gave tonight. This is a little bit of a synthesis of a few understandings. A lot of that website is being redone. It's dedicated to offering the Silvapalatin meme out into the world. Proactive, generative ways of understanding ourselves in that way. So, you're a fan of that, right?
I am a big fan of that. Silvapalatin Rising.
Silvapalatin Rising. Subtitle, Survival of the Most Loving.
Yeah.
See? Because the other vibration, Survival of the Fittest.
Mm-hmm.
This next octave, survival of the most loved.
Yeah. Right on, brother.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Woo!
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's 5:30. Anybody has any other questions or wants to talk? Welcome.
Are you a vegan?
I am.
Do you advocate for veganism?
I'm a vegan myself. I'm not a strict vegan. I feel if it's offered with love, I eat it. But otherwise, I feel personally that the whole meat thing is a huge karmic bad shit going down.
Yeah,
so I don't recommend that.
Have you ever done raw?
I mean, I grew up meat.
I've gone in and out of raw.
In and out, yeah.
But I felt a lot of people have egoic attachments to it. So I've been kind of turned off from that.
Yeah.
But I'm around it a lot.
Yeah.
And I've gone through phases.
Do you go on a vibratory level of like seasonal eating? Do you like eat with the seasons or?
Well, I haven't had a kitchen in 6 years.
Oh wow.
So, but it's changing in a couple weeks.
How do you keep your food?
I go to New Seasons Deli.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Wow.
Not all time, but.
Yeah, awesome. we were just at Attunement Center, and we created, what was that with the pots? What was she calling it? Cool.
A natural refrigeration.
Evaporative refrigeration
device with just pots and sand around it. It evaporates.
I'm moving into a new house. I'm an Amma devotee. So I'm really interested in the whole Vedic, Ayurvedic thing. I'm going to experiment with some Ayurveda.
Have you ever journeyed with any shamans to talk to the plants?
Any what?
Journeyed with any shamans to talk to the plants directly or talk with the earth and ask questions about how the landscape works and how what needs to be done with a particular plot of land or had that sort of connection with the plant?
Yeah. Okay, the plant that I work with the most is ayahuasca. So that plant's pretty and vocal about its what it has to say. So if I have any questions, ayahuasca will clue me in one way or the other about that. So I often check in with it. It's like, I think we all need some kind of resource beyond our egoic stuff. Either our disincarnate grandma or self-realized being or some high vibrational plants or stuff comes through the plants. There's a lot of mystery to it. But you know, you feel it. But I think it's always good to check in. I mean, meditation is an important part of just stilling the mind and seeing what comes through. Because I think there's a lot of beings that are trying to communicate. There's too much noise in the head. And who knows what you're attuned towards, you know, that way. And you may discover connections with beings or whatever, a part of your higher self that's happy to communicate to you about things like that.
Yeah. You know how you were saying the anti-war is sort of, there's a place for it, but it's not exactly...
Sort of like symptom reduction.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a place for it.
Right. So but how do you feel about like the earth itself? Like, should we not even try to change everything since it's just changing itself? We will just change ourselves within and then everything will be fine? Or like, I mean, you know, like, what is your information that you've been receiving from the plant world saying?
I would say this, that anytime you want to be an activist or something, you gotta check in with yourself and how much you're just projecting some problem you have with your mother or your father or something, because often we project unhealed parts of ourselves out in the world thinking we're doing good that way. So it's like clean your house first.
Yeah. Sure.
And you clean your house first, and I'm talking like open accounts in your psyche. Mm-hmm. When you do that internal work, you'll find that the harmonics that start to cultivate in yourself will express themselves and will attract things that need to be done.
Right.
So really it's like clean your house first, then you can clean the world house. Come from that kind of place.
Right.
That's what I can say about it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so you're welcome to take some of these.
They're around.
Around.
Yep, they're
around.
They're out there.
there. And if you're done with it, you can put them up somewhere.
To share.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. It happens every month. Mm-hmm.
Like go, yes.
Yeah.
Promoting.
Anything else?
But I'm a real vegan, and I don't understand when you say that it's an egoistic thing. I don't know. What do you mean by that?
How do you mean?
Did you say that it was an egoistic?
Well, I'm just saying that some people, the relationship, I was talking about raw, becomes egoic because I'm raw and you're an asshole, I'm better
yes.
than you.
Yes.
Okay. That's pervasive. As far as I've seen, not just in raw foods, but vegetarian, etc. So this is why, even though I'm a vegetarian, I eat turkey once a year at home, partly so I'm not attached to the identity of a vegetarian, and made my mom happy. I just say it's be careful when you're making lifestyle choices to purify your intentions, or be aware of why you're doing it. Not so that you can like think yourself better than other people,
okay.
and use it as a another wedge of separation.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
What's a good way to identify the plant that you need now?
If it's growing in your backyard.
Yeah.
Sometimes, if you have a backyard.
Right.
If you have a backyard, see what weeds are there.
Yeah.
They often come in that way. Mm. Otherwise. There are practices that there's an herbalist in town. I don't know if he still does it, but on Wednesday you do these mystery tinctures and you take it and then you try to all develop a feeling tone of what that is, and you may through that kind of practice. I mean, one way to do it is maybe ask, meditate,
yeah, I've seen that.
And look for signs.
Yeah.
So what I call about marginal cognitions. Synchronicities. That's probably the best way to do
okay.
it.
Yeah.
Meditate, ask, and be open to how nature is going to communicate or spirit in ways that are not rational.
Yeah.
Right.
Asking is perfect, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you won't receive.
Yes.
Anything else?
I just want to say the words that you come up with are excellent as well. Neo-indigenous.
Neo-indigenous.
Remember, I went through the academic world, so I'm into words.
Yeah, I like words.
I've been out of it for.
I like naming.
I left academia like 10 years ago, which has freed me up a lot, and it's helped me remake my relationship with language in a way that feels more right for me.
Right.
But I am very much of a agreement that like conscious language, to really look, because if you really want to grow, language can often hold you back.
Mm-hmm.
And we inherit a lot of mechanistic metaphors, or like violent metaphors, like killing time, time is money, things like that. But to like work about making your language more organismic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, the coat lives in that closet. Pee Wee Herman's Funhouse has a lot of that sort of living sort of thing. But you know, like the growing edge as opposed to cutting edge.
Oh, yeah, right.
Composting, flowering,
totally.
Things like that. Just to be conscious about how what you speak, you create your reality. And you want to create a silver polish reality, that's what you want to do. You got to grow and be conscious of all these things. You know, it's not for just people who are dumb, you know. You got to be smart about it.
You know, I was watching you speak and you flow and you speak like water.
Yeah.
Like
if you watch me sing.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Have you sang?
Yeah.
Huh?
Have you sang?
I haven't sang.
You're talking about singing.
What's that?
You're talking about singing. Please.
Well, this was a talk, not really a sing. We do a sing.
We do a song. Bless you. We can all do some songs.
Okay, we'll do it. I'll do a song.
So it was everything.
Yeah, let's do a song.
I know.
Okay, often songs that come to Singing Alive, many, many songs, and I record them, and we record them. And sometimes I feel I really like the melody, but I want to change the words. Okay, to make it more of a medicine song or a Silver Palatin song, I'm often doing that. Okay. So this was an animal song, but now it's a plant song. The vine and the leaf. Okay, it's sort of a Silvopolitan song. Ready?
Yes.
I hear the vine and the leaf in the forest. I hear the vine and the leaf singing. I hear the vine and the leaf in the forest. I hear the vine and the leaf singing. And in return I sing along, follow the path of awakening. And soon I come to sing my song and offer the fruit of my flowering. I hear the vine and the leaf in the forest. I hear the vine and the leaf singing. I hear the vine and the leaf in the forest. I hear the vine and the leaf singing. And in return I sing a song, out of the path of awakening. And soon I come to sing my song and offer the fruit of my flowering. I hear the vine and the leaf in the forest. I hear the vine and the leaf singing. I hear the vine and the leaf in the forest. I hear the vine and the leaf singing. And in return I sing along, out of the path of awakening. And soon I come to sing my song and offer the fruit of my flowering. I hear the vine and the leaf in the forest. I hear the vine and the leaf singing. I hear the vine and the leaf in the forest. I hear the vine and the leaf singing. And in return I sing along, out of the path of awakening. And soon I come to sing my song and offer the fruit of my flowering. I hear the vine and the leaf in the forest. I hear the vine and the leaf singing. I hear the vine and the leaf in the forest. I hear the vine and the leaf singing. And in return I sing along, follow the path of awakening. And soon I come to sing my song and offer the fruit of my flowering. I hear the vine and the leaf in the forest. I hear the vine and the leaf singing. I hear the vine and the leaf in the forest. I hear the vine and the leaf singing. And in return I sing along, follow the path of awakening. And soon I come to sing my song and offer the fruit of my flowering.
Yes.